Welcome to episode 14 of Open Source Underdogs, the podcast where the founders of open source software companies explain the process of defining a successful business model. Jacob Freund is the founder and CEO of Komunda, a Berlin-based company that is reinventing workflow automation. I recorded this interview back in November, but I've been a little backlogged. In December, Komunda announced the completion of a 25 million euro Series A. Although Jacob told me it was in the works, I didn't ask him about it in this interview because it wasn't finalized. But Jacob has a great story to tell, and Komunda is a business that we can all learn from. So without further ado, let's cut to the tape. Jacob, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, sure. Happy to.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. What did you do before Komunda?
So before I started Komunda, I used to work with another software vendor in the same industry, business process management. And that was just about a year or so. And before that, I actually went to university. So I did start Komunda pretty soon after I finished my studies, basically.
Tell me a little bit about how Komunda got started. What's the origin story?
As I just mentioned, I was already in this industry called business process management, which I always found very interesting. So I did work in that industry as a consultant. And I figured that I could actually do that, you know, as a freelancer. And then I met my co-founder, Bernd, and he was already freelancing the same industry as a Java software developer doing workflow automation with open source BPM technology back then. So the two of us met up and we had this idea about starting a consulting business around BPM. That was back in 2008. And that's how Komunda basically came about.
Who are the customers of Komunda? Do you segment in any way?
Yes, maybe just to complete that story. So Bernd and I started Komunda as a consulting business for BPM, and we did that for about 5 years until 2012, 13, more or less. And as consultants, we understood that market quite well, you know, so we saw all the technologies out there and we saw that there were BPM process automation products delivered by the big players like the IBMs and Oracles and Software AGs. And looked like a good number of the organizations we were consulting with struggled with actually applying those products. So they had software developers themselves. They wanted those software developers to do process automation projects. And those developers struggled to use the IBMs and Oracles and other products because they were so heavyweight and not really, you know, open in the sense of an architecture and not easy to embed in their tech stack and things like that. We decided then in 2013 that the time was ripe to deliver a BPM technology that would be appreciated by developers. And we started that as an open source project. This is basically, you know, how Komunda transitioned from a consulting business to a software business. So to answer your question now, this kind of open source process automation technology applies to basically any organization that wants to, you know, automate their business on the one hand, and at the same time, see IT as their core business infrastructure, therefore also entertain their own software development teams. And you will find that kind of organization in different industries. So, for example, insurances in the German-speaking area, but also banks, of course, in the broadest sense, financial services, telco companies, media companies, e-commerce. So in that sense, it's a real horizontal technology applied in different verticals.
Why do you think it was important to make the product open source?
Well, because for two reasons, really. We were already engaged with another open source project. So the initial version of our project was basically a fork of that project because we didn't see it really evolving and moving. So there was some, you know, history behind it on the one hand. But and then again, also, we figured that, you know, since this is a product that is built with developers top of mind and meant to be used by developers, it's kind of a natural thing to say, okay, let's make this available open source so that developers can adapt it very easily without signing up for anything, that developers can also contribute to if they are missing features or if they spot bugs, not so much in order to get their workforce for free, but in order to actually, you know, get them engaged and excited about the technology and also understand where we should be headed in terms of the next features and the roadmap. So it's kind of a product management treat that you will get when you deliver such a technology open source.
So how do you monetize? What things do you sell at the company?
Yeah, so I guess it's a pretty common approach, really. So you could say it's an open core based business model. So we have the workflow engine, you know, the actual thing under the hood in a headless fashion that executes those business user friendly flowchart diagrams in order to orchestrate services, for example, like microservices, but also in order to orchestrate human work and things like that. So this is headless, so developers can just embed it in their own architecture. And that's all open source. When it then comes to putting your processes into production and running them, and you can still do that with the open source version, that's fine, it's stable and everything. However, you might want to also have additional features around operations, for example. So there is a tool that we deliver, which is called Cockpit, which comes with pretty powerful features for operating complex ecosystems of automated workflows. And that tool is partially open source as well, but the majority of features is available to enterprise customers. Another tool, for example, is called Optimize, which is more about business users. So business users get the ability to look into the running processes right away in real time. They get nice reports and, you know, for example, heat maps on flowchart diagrams, so that I, as a business user, have this direct access to the technically running business processes. In terms of the adoption journey, it means that developers adopt the technology right away. It's open source. They can use it. They propose to put this to production towards their management. At some point, the management might wonder about, yes, of course, support and maintenance, but also about, okay, is there any additional tooling available for operating this? And is there any additional tooling for making our business sponsors happy? And that is available with enterprise.
In terms of revenues, is the greatest percentage of your revenues from license or from support?
So the support is part of the license subscription. So we don't unbundle that. You sign up for the enterprise version of the product, you get all the additional tools and features and the support. So since we don't unbundle that, I couldn't say that, you know, the revenue can be split between those two elements. When we look at consulting, which is about, you know, best practices and our consultants coming on site and reviewing your architecture and stuff like that, that consulting comes on top of that. So when we look at our revenue, you could say that about 90% is coming from the enterprise subscription, so which is the license business, including the support service, and 10% is around consulting services.
Are other companies or software vendors taking your open source and building it into their product?
Yeah, absolutely. We have customers, for example, there's Gainsight, a customer success management firm, which embeds Camunda in their product. There's Autodesk, for example, and many others. So it's pretty straightforward for a software vendor to embed Camunda in their product in a headless fashion, so their end users wouldn't be aware of Camunda. But, you know, they get those workflow management features. So if I was, for example, a vendor that had a product that is about email automation in whatever way, you know, like for marketing or others, and there's, you know, those drip campaigns where I send out an email and depending on the reaction of the recipient, I might send out a follow-up email. That's a workflow. And you can design that workflow in a graphical way in Camunda and then let Camunda run that workflow and all, you know, within your product without exposing Camunda to your users.
How are those relationships going? Do you see contributions back from those partners? And I'm just wondering, it's like, has it been really beneficial or sort of neutral, or how has it gone with those types of deals?
Well, I would say it is extremely beneficial for us, but not so much in the sense that they would contribute large amounts of code in that sense, that they would actually like be building the core features that we then simply merge GitHub and then we're done. So that's not what you should expect when you embark on open source or when you bet on open source as a vendor yourself. But you will be getting us a lot of very, very helpful feedback from the people actually using your technology. That can be just individuals, open source users. They can also be organizations like those software vendors. By looking at what they are asking for in the forum, are looking at their pull requests or things that they are building on top of our product and then contributing that as what we call community extension, which we also feature then in our ecosystem. We understand pretty well what, you know, should be the next steps in terms of making the product more powerful. So one example, I just mentioned this heat map feature that shows which path of a process are executed most often. That was in the initial version, not developed by ourselves, but by a partner of ours as a plugin for our front end. And then we looked at that and we actually redeveloped it from scratch. So we didn't actually merge a single line of code, but we got a pretty good understanding of how this feature could look like. And that's similar to, you know, very developer-oriented stuff like having a Spring Boot integration, for example. That can also be related to, you know, more business user-related features like the heat map that I just mentioned and many more aspects.
Do these customers who are productizers, mm-hmm. Do they buy a subscription?
That's both. There are software vendors that sign up, for example, in an OEM fashion with us, and then we even get royalties based on their own success with the product that's out there. But of course, there's also software companies that use the open source version and don't pay us. And I'm quite sure there's many more in that category. We can't really track that, you know, since we don't ask people to leave their email address in order to download Camunda. It's not that we have a direct tracking of who's using the open source version, not paying us. But of course, on an anecdotal level, when we look at our meetups and other, you know, community events, we actually do encourage and invite those companies to present there just as well. It's not important for us in that sense that they're paying customers in order to get presence in our community.
How do you look at sales and marketing? Is it mostly inbound, or how are you sort of approaching it?
Well, as of today, it's 100% inbound, in fact. So we don't do any cold calling or other ways of outbound prospecting. So what happens is that we basically, you know, have the website, of course, and the website is about the open source community, and it's also about the enterprise offering. So people approach us asking for a quote, for example, you know, submitting that pricing request form, things like that. And of course, there's also some classical, you know, marketing inbound activities like content that we provide, and then you would sign up for that content, becoming a lead and things like that. But there's no outbound activities as of today, at least.
So in terms of partner development, is the partner important to you as a channel?
I would say it's very important to us in the sense of having resources available, people available who can help our customers to implement their workflows with Camunda. So we have a lot of system integration partners that you can find on the website. They have to go through a certain program of getting educated and certified eventually, etc. So we have those SI partners in basically any region of the world. And they're helping us a lot because our clients who are talking to us often ask about, okay, are there any local resources available that can come on site and help us implementing Camunda in our organization? So this is where the SI partners are extremely valuable. I wouldn't say that as of today that they are super, you know, important channel partner. So of course we have a few, especially the bigger ones, who are also proposing Camunda to their customers and bring new business to us. But I wouldn't say that we have come to this point as of today thanks to that channel.
Where do you draw the line with open source? You mentioned that you're open core. How do you prioritize which features are contributed to open core or the core product and which features are going to be enterprise?
First of all, I know that there are some companies who just use open source in order to piggyback on this term and deliver what you could call cripple software, which is not really like production ready or not really usable. And that's not how we see it. So we're really committed to that idea. And that's why we want to deliver great technology, open source, that developers can adopt and use right away and build great stuff with that. And then also putting that into productions. So in that sense, when we look at new features and if we should make them available open source or not, we have that in mind. It means that when there's things about the core engine that especially apply to developers, you know, where developers, you know, we have a rule we call the rainy Saturday rule. So if you imagine a developer, you know, sitting at home on a rainy Saturday and they're just browsing around the internet and checking out interesting new technology, and perhaps they have some project in mind that they're looking at work right now, for example, we want those developers to be excited and be powered to solve their problem or build exciting stuff with Camunda right away. So when it's about features that would support that idea and would support the developer's life, basically, then this feature is a natural for made available open source. It applies to the core engine, the headless engine. But for example, it also applies to a tool that we deliver, which is called the Modeler, which is a nice desktop application to create those BPM flowchart diagrams. So that tool is available open source as well. And it's a whole ecosystem of plugins contributed by other developers that enhance that tool. So it's not just about the core engine stuff that is open source. So then we have other features which are more about also other personas within the organization. So for example, when I look at a, let's say, CIO or executive manager in the IT department, they might worry about certain stuff that really kicks in when you go live with a large set of mission-critical business processes, like high availability and data replication across data centers, or update mechanisms if you want to have like an update of Camunda in your cluster with zero downtime and stuff like that. So again, the majority of things that we deliver here is open source still. But here's also the possibility to provide features where you can rightfully say, okay, dear, you know, large organization, you want to use this technology on a large scale for your mission critical business. It's fine and fair for us to ask you to sign up for an enterprise subscription in order to get nice features that you would need to build yourselves, which you could, and some do, if you wanted to use it that way. And everyone's fine with that approach.
You mentioned before that you were still providing some professional services within the organization. How do you draw the line with when to refer to partners in a certain region or when to maybe take on those professional services yourself?
Well, our PS team is very specialized, obviously, in our technology and surrounding best practices. Like, for example, you know, how to involve business stakeholders and capture their ideas about the 2B process. And, you know, put that into a sound BPMN, that's the standard here, BPMN flowchart diagram that can be executed. You know, that's not so much even about coding or architecture. It's about simple best practices to talk to business users. So that kind of skill set you will find with our consulting team. And it's a small team, really. So they're not supposed to implement or do the heavy lifting of the project implementation work. So when you're an organization, just say, I want to start my Camunda adoption journey and I need some guidance, you know, how to do that. Then our consulting team is happy to help, let it be on site or remotely. But when you say, I need someone who will actually be with me, let's say a team even of developers or consultants on site for the next 6 months supporting us and implementing this, etc., then we would actually refuse that request. We wouldn't deliver on that. So that's the situation where it's pretty clear that our system integration partners are actually the go-to people here.
No one has enough people to serve all of the customers out there. When customers buy a subscription, do you provide different levels of service based upon different categories of customers?
When someone buys our subscription, they're just a customer in quotation marks. And we value each customer very high, obviously. So we do not distinguish in that sense. What we do have is sometimes customers are in specific situations. For example, you know, if someone says, okay, I have the situation now, I want to go live next month. I'm having issues in whatever way about performance, or I don't know, you know, I need some guidance regarding tuning the engine, or, you know, with Optimize using Elasticsearch, you know, as a repository. So if they're struggling with that for whatever reason, then of course we will prioritize and it will help. But it doesn't really matter if it's a mom and pop shop, so to speak, or if it's like a Fortune 500 or blue chip company.
There's other BPM tools out there. You mentioned some of the larger companies like Oracle's and IBM's, et cetera. So what's the value proposition actually of Camunda versus some of the other offerings out there?
If you compare it to the ones that you just named, the IBM's and Oracle's, we believe that Camunda is much more developer-friendly in the first place. When you look at other open source technologies nowadays, like Elasticsearch and Apache Kafka, etc., it's pretty clear that they are geared towards developers. When you look at classical so-called BPMS products, not so much. So they had other value propositions in mind, like, hey, we're empowering your business users to drag and drop and point and click and do everything in a model-driven way. And it's pretty much of a closed proprietary suite, basically. So we actually distinguished Camunda from day one and said, no, we're actually blending the mindset and attitude of the Apache Kafka and Elasticsearch projects with the use case of business process automation. So this means that we see Camunda as the most developer-oriented and most lightweight, and therefore for developers easy to use technology on the one hand, to allow developers to meet the business needs around business process automation on the other hand. So this is where we believe is our sweet spot. It's kind of right between super low level developer oriented technology and relatively high level business oriented products.
One of the challenges of starting a business is figuring out how to create the right offering. Then that includes both pricing and what's included in the offering. Camunda's been around for 10 years or so. Has the offering changed a lot? Have you ever had to sort of tweak the offering or pivot a little bit? Just wondering, like, what the process was like for you.
So first of all, as I just explained, Camunda's been around as a company for 10 years, but the product only for 5 years. However, we didn't have to pivot the core product so far, and I believe that's because of the first 5 years of consulting. So those first 5 years of consulting helped us to understand very well, you know, how a product should look like to have a great product market fit. which is certainly our biggest asset right now, the product market fit. Regarding the Camunda BPM product in its essence, didn't have to pivot at all, actually. Where we did pivot, however, on a smaller scale was when we added new features or new components to the product stack. So just to give you one example, Camunda supports BPMN, which is a standard for workflow automation. And at some point, we also wanted to support a standard for case management. And we added that to the stack. Didn't really take off, to be honest. So I wouldn't say yet, you know, it doesn't make any sense at all, but we had to realize at some point, okay, this case management thing, I mean, yes, of course, there's a market for that and it's important. But to be honest, I mean, the actual thing that is going on in business IT is automation. So it's not so much about supporting knowledge workers, but if you want to be extreme, actually replacing knowledge workers. You want to automate. We therefore decided to double down on this aspect of business process automation. This little iterations, like a year or so of trying something out and then, you know, tuning that, letting go of something, maybe doubling down on other stuff. That's what we have certainly seen.
Would you say that your open core strategy is more about adding features, let's say extra features, like you mentioned, better DevOps deployment scaling options for large enterprise? So would you say it's more about adding different features into the core products or adjacent tools to the core product?
It's both, really. You know, when it comes to the community-driven innovation in the product, I would say it's, to a large extent, adding features to the core. So I just mentioned Spring Boot, for example. That's a great example. You know, that's really something that the community asked for at some point and even did a bit themselves, plugins, etc. And we were really amazed by this activity and engagement. So at some point, the community asked, okay, please, guys, could we make this part of the core product so that it's supported and included in the next releases, etc.? So that's the kind of innovation that happens in the core that is very much driven by the people using the product or also paying us for using the product for the enterprise version. That's one end. Then we have that other end where I would say it's a bit more proactive, you know, where we collect all those impressions from different sources and figure that, hey, actually, there's some problems around, for example, business visibility and the business really being involved in processes at one time. And then there's some vision coming about. Okay, what if, you know, the business could look at what's going on anytime in real time and even get machine learning backed advice about how to improve their processes? And this is more of a proactive creation of an adjacent tool, as you just said. In this particular example, it's Optimize. It's really both happening, you could say.
When you look at long-term planning, do you have a vision for where Camunda will be in 5 years or 10 years?
You know, on a more, let's say, fundamental level, we would love if workflow automation as a technology and as an instrument to achieve this automated enterprise, if this would be, you know, recognized by the developer community on the scale of the most popular open source projects that are around as of today. Because if we're honest, if you look at Camunda and Google Trends, you see a pretty nice trend. But when you compare it to the Elasticsearch and Apache Kafka project, in absolute numbers, of course, it's not as widespread. So there's not so many developers aware of Camunda as of today. And we would love to change that. We really believe that it's great fun to use Camunda and that it solves serious problems in developers' lives. So this is the one part of the vision that I would see for the next 5 years, that we have this visibility and awareness of a top-tier open source project. Of course, as well, there's certain things around the product stack. For example, right now, Camunda is delivered on-premise, so you can download it yourself and operate it on-premise or your own AWS instance. So we're also, of course, looking into offering it as a managed service and things like that. So there's a certain vision-based roadmap for the next years. But at the end of the day, it's really about what I just said. It's about creating this awareness among developers for a technology that is, compared to classical open source techs, relatively business-oriented. So this is where we are pioneering, in fact. BPM is a business thing, really. But doing it in a developer way, I believe, can propel any organization forward that sees themselves nowadays as a technology company, like any bank or insurance or telco, as actually a software company of a certain flavor. And this is where we actually kick in.
What do you think are the biggest challenges facing open source companies today?
You asked about, you know, where do you draw the line between open source and enterprise features? I think that's a classic one. I think the pattern that I explained, this rainy Saturday pattern, I think that works pretty well for at least software products that are geared towards developers. What I wouldn't do as of today is I wouldn't start a company that has a product that is meant to be used by business users and business users only and make that available open source. Don't really believe in that approach. But if you have a product that is meant to be used by developers or, like in our case, developers plus business users, then open source makes a lot of sense. The challenge is still to, of course, balance the open source adoption on the one hand with your investments and the conversion into paying customers on the other hand. Once you figured that out, you can simply invest in your pattern and it works pretty well. So the remaining challenge, of course, can be that there's other vendors piggybacking on the success of your open source project and competing with your enterprise offering. The most prominent example right now is Amazon Web Services, giving MongoDB and Elastic and others a headache because they're offering that open source stuff with not contributing back to the community or signing up with an OEM license or whatever with a vendor. So they're actually, you know, competing with the software companies on the open source community. And I know that there are some companies now wondering about whether they should change the license, for example, make it more difficult, etc. I don't really think that makes sense. So I think having a clear idea about the buying center and then deliver the respective features for each persona in that buying center, either open source if it's more developers, either enterprise if it's more business users. I think if you do that, then you have a clear conversion channel or clear conversion track. And you also have a more defensible position when it comes to, you know, those cloud vendors hijacking, so to speak, your open source project, because they can only offer the open source project and they cannot offer those enterprise features. That's the challenge that I would say I'm aware of right now, but that's also what I believe would be the right approach to tackle it. And when you look at, for example, Elastic, that's how they do it right now, in a sense.
Which open source license are you publishing Komunda under right now?
It's mixed. If you look at it, like on the top level, you will read Apache license, which is the vast majority of source code you will find on GitHub in our repository is licensed under Apache. There's also some MIT licenses. But in a nutshell, it's those licenses that would permit you to use it in more or less whatever way you like. It's not stuff like GPL or things like that.
Do you have any personal advice for entrepreneurs who are getting started and want to use open source as part of their business model?
I mean, my experience is limited. You know, I've only built this one company. I'm not a serial entrepreneur. So I have this one experience. And as I mentioned before, we started as a consulting business and this worked extremely well for us. So being consultants first, building expertise and reputation in a strong home market like the German speaking area, you know, where there's not a lot of competition that you could find in the US, which is also kind of helpful, of course, to, you know, get going. And then using that expertise and reputation and profits to start a software business. That worked super well for us, and I believe it can work for most people. You just need to be aware that the biggest invest is time. So it took us 5 years before we started the software business. The question is if you have that time, of course. Besides that, the things that we just discussed around how to define the business model and how to find what's open source and whatnot, that's certainly crucial. We didn't talk so much about, you know, talent so far, the people that you hire and that you work with. That's, of course, another very crucial element. And as you can imagine, open source helps attracting great engineers. So there's engineers who really identify themselves with open source and that has an impact on that they want to work with us. Here, however, you need to be honest and authentic. So are you doing this only because you're, for example, idealistic about open source? Is it like your personal crusade against the evil capitalistic vendors? Or do you actually have a business rationale? And it can be both. So I guess in our case, actually a bit of the first, but probably more of the latter. And that's fine, you know, but then you should be honest about that also towards your team and they will appreciate that. And those that are actually like zealots about open source, they might even leave at some point, you know, because oh, we should make everything available open source and, you know, no features enterprise and that kind of stuff. And then it's better to part than to not be honest about that. That's another advice that I would give about that.
Jacob, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks.
Special thanks to the Komunda team for hosting the interview. Transcription and episode audio can be found on opensourceunderdogs.com. Music from Broke for Free, Chris Zabriskie, and Lee Rosevier. Production assistance and transcription by Natalie Lau. Operational support from William Lau. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @FossPodcast. That's FOSS Podcast. Next week, we'll have a remote interview with LifeRay founder Brian Chung. One of his interviews inspired this podcast. Don't miss it. He has a lot of brilliant and inspiring insights into life and business. Until then, thanks for listening.